Nonprofits. I'm Steve Boland, and I am very pleased to be joined today by Shanna Berkey. She's the Vice President of Customer Experience at Classy. Shanna, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
We got connected to talk a little bit about the impact of election year work on the nonprofit sector and fundraising and communications and how all those things run together. And I'm so excited about some of the thoughts that you've already shared with me that we can dive into. But before we do, could I ask you to just help reintroduce people to Classy as an organization, the work that you do, and then your role within Classy before we dive into the election year stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So Classy is a fundraising platform that supports direct giving, peer-to-peer fundraising, recurring donations, event management. We are here to directly support nonprofits by giving them the tools to create a really amazing donation experience online. I am, like you mentioned, the VP of Customer Experience at Classy. I am incredibly fortunate to hold this position, most importantly, because I get to engage with our customers so often. But the CX title includes a lot of our customer-facing teams. So we really, you know, want to focus on creating a unified experience for our nonprofits as they're coming online with us and all the way through their digital fundraising experience. So that includes a few different departments, but the CX as whole is customer facing, and we really focus on our customers.
All right. That experience is so important. And as somebody who's used a lot of different platforms, I really do appreciate having that focus on what the customer has to go through to use it. Because so many of the people that we engage with through this podcast and other places don't have lots of experienced staff that just sit around managing databases and giving platforms and whatnot. And it's just great that there's that outreach to make it as seamless and user-friendly as you can make it, while at the same time really functioning for what it needs to do. So we'll have a link to Classy in the show notes, so folks that are listening can just scroll down on your description, your podcast feed, and click right in to learn more about that. But part of that experience is, you know, help your users to understand bumps in the road, changes in the landscape that might impact their giving. And the election year stuff, and especially these major election years in the United States, have so many things going on. And it really does raise the question for a lot of nonprofits of, you know, how do they get heard within all of that conversation? And how do they think about being ready to respond to, you know, things that are going to be hard to predict necessarily coming up? So as you begin this conversation with some of your customers and the folks in the nonprofit sector, how do you like to prompt people to start thinking about the impact of elections on what they do in their fundraising work?
Yeah, it's such an important topic that we started this conversation with a lot of our customers, you know, even at the end of last year. And the reason being is so much of this has to do with thinking about your strategy, but also planning. And so for us, you know, quelling a little bit of the fear of what happens during election giving, the assumption is my fundraising is going to go down because I can't compete. And that's honestly something that is not simply just not true. So the 2023 philanthropic landscape actually revealed that charitable giving over the last 10 presidential elections has actually increased outside of 2008 during the global financial crisis. But this information really kind of helps us to understand that we don't have to walk into this year fearful that, you know, our fundraising historically is going to go down because that the trends don't actually showcase that. But what they do, what we do know is there are ways to really set yourself up for success. And we'll talk about a few of those today, but really understanding your own personal data. So what has happened in the past? We always like to say, maybe go back if you can further than 2020 to look at a few things within your data. Did your average donation size go down? What happened with your high net worth donors, right? Was there something that you saw one or two of those fall off where the donation size wasn't as big that year? A lot of that information within your own data can actually help you tell Less tell the story, but more inform your strategy as far as how you want to move forward. We'll talk a little bit about, dates. Dates are really important during this time. And again, it will impact kind of your fundraising calendar, which we just want to make sure people are aware of. So not introducing new campaigns at a certain time. We still want you talking to your donors. We still want you stewarding them in the right way, but maybe at certain times we're talking about certain things. Galas are another one of those. Where does the event season kind of play a role? So there's a ton around this that we get really excited to talk with our customers on, and because there's so much here and really can help drive a successful fundraising strategy in an election year.
Well, I really appreciate the advice right up front that don't make that decision for your potential donor. Like, well, they're going to be giving to these candidates at this time, so we shouldn't ask them. And so contextualize the work, understand it, but don't back off of it because, right, some of those folks are going to be more motivated to connect with your mission, depending on what that mission is and what time you're talking to them and all those good things. But it's so important to not close off the idea that we're never going to even put it in front of our donor. Base because we're worried that they're going to be thinking about these other things instead, but give them the opportunity to talk about how you're engaging at the right time. So I really appreciate that. I want to just ask you a little bit about that digging into your own data and going back, certainly 2 years, but four or maybe even more for organizations that maybe haven't done a great job of keeping that historic data in at least a single platform. It seems like this may be an opportunity if there's some time now to grab some of that, stuff that may have been in an old Excel spreadsheet or a previous tool that you were using and start doing some of that importing and cleaning up before you get too much further so that you can learn from that thing. It's never too late to get the information you do have collated in a tool that can help you understand it. And I think that's a great message that I'm hearing from you, that even if it's not, I've got 8 years of data from the same database that I've been using, but rather we've been on this one for a couple of years, but before that we had these other things and maybe we didn't do a great job of importing. And here's a moment to really think that this could be a good use of your time to do that. As a customer experience person, I assume you talk with people about migration of data at different points in their work. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, data, we really view data as such a gold mine, right? It can do so much in empowering a nonprofit strategy. And oftentimes it's not always looked at. And so, there's some aspects of your data that I think, right up front can give you insight as to how to think about things. The migration itself, I mean, we've seen some pretty heavy migrations trying to get, all data into a single place. It's not easy to do. As much as I wish it was for so many of our clients, and so many different nonprofits, it's not always an easy thing to do. So by just focusing and, if your data isn't in a singular place, just focusing on a single data point, even in multiple sources, can kind of set you on the right path, right? So in some cases, and most cases, I would say, just start with your average donation size, right? You might, you don't have to go into very detailed donor data, just looking at average donation size over, months, not even on a weekly basis, but just over months during those years can actually inform, okay, did things change or did they not change? So average donation size is one that I always point out just as a first indication of strategy or ways to inform the strategy. The second one is actually number of donors throughout that year. Again, so you don't have to go so deep into the data that it's intimidating in a lot of ways, but you don't have to go so deep. So you can use three or four larger metrics that can inform, again, when I say larger metrics, they're not so deep within the data, especially if it's living in different areas. But you can use three or four of those metrics to actually inform the strategy and telling you how to navigate. But it doesn't, it's hard. The data game is really tough.
Yeah.
Migration's even tougher. But there are some ways to kind of get through some of that noise, even when it lives in so many different places.
So as you think about, you know, getting the information that you do have available, learning from even a couple of those points, even if you don't have very complex interaction across all of those things to look at right away, that's a great starting place. But as you look forward into this year that's going to become noisier and noisier the closer to November that we get, you started mentioning really being aware of any kind of timed event impacts. So what are some things that you urge people to think about, you know, in terms of what timing may be important? We're already kind of past the Super Tuesday moment. As you said, some people you started working with in 23, so they may have been a little bit more aware of those earlier primary type things that can impact people's attention. But at this point, as we're recording this in early April, what do you see coming up in 2024 that you encourage charities to kind of think through?
Yeah. So there's a few things. Well, October is just going to stand out in general, and we can have a lot of discussions about October leading into the actual, you know, election day, just because the amount of noise in October, things just ramp up pretty drastically. But some of the other key dates before we go into that specific month, you know, the primary is happening on May 14th and June 4th. You know, if I was in a nonprofit shoes, I wouldn't be launching any new campaigns during that time. Another sensitive time could be in July around the Republican National Convention, or August during the Democratic National Convention. Again, just being smart with how you are viewing these, you know, bigger moments in the media. And in some ways, we hate to say it's a competition, but in some ways you could be competing for eyes if you were trying to launch something, or if you were trying to, you know, for example, push donations or push ticket sales, or, you know, launch new program, those sorts of things. You're somewhat competing during that time. And you don't necessarily have to if you could navigate around these dates. So again, just to repeat, you know, the primaries on in May and June, and then being sensitive around the two major conventions in July and August are, you know, where I would start first. Then as we go later into the year, we'll talk about October. So the weeks leading up to the election are flooded, and they're flooded with asks. They're flooded with, you know, whether in whatever medium you're using, you're being overwhelmed with information. Again, to go back to what we were talking about in the beginning, don't stop communicating just because the messaging is being flooded with, you know, more of the election or kind of what's happening in that climate. Don't stop communicating, but be mindful of what you're launching. Be mindful of what you're communicating. A lot of, you know, praising and giving thanks during, you know, the month of October can be super helpful as you're still trying to steward during that time frame. So don't shy away from it. Just be conscious of what you're communicating during that time.
All makes a lot of sense. I think there may be some nonprofit missions that have different opportunities on that timing than others. I mean, certainly if you're in a host city and people are really talking a lot more about that, it might be different from if you're you know, in a community that is not as directly impacted by a convention or whatever. But there may also be those moments of you know, what's the thing being talked about, and how does our mission reflect, you know, that key moment of an endorsing convention or whatever. Some charities are going to have more opportunity to leverage that kind of message specifically around that timing than perhaps others that are less politically connected. And I assume that's going to have to be more of a individual nonprofit mission decision than it is necessarily a blanket piece of advice for any charity.
Yeah, that's a really important point, especially as we think about, you know, hotter topics when, you know, from a social perspective. And so, you know, what we have seen in the past with some of our clients, whether it be on certain rights that we're talking through, certain where funding is going to happen, being sensitive to those types of issues, there is an opportunity to ensure that your messaging is being heard and elevated in the same way that it's being talked about in the media. And so it definitely can be an opportunity. Something I know we want to talk about is kind of having this rapid response strategy.
Right.
When your cause is elevated in this way, and how to think about it. So rapid response strategy can definitely take in a few different forms, but it's all about capturing that interest that all of a sudden, and sometimes it's not all of a sudden, it's
right.
just heightened, which sometimes can be triggered by an election. So these issues that we know about and causes that might not necessarily come to the forefront outside of an election year, can have, a moment in the sun, which can turn people into really thinking about, okay, how do I support this? How can I make an impact? How can I be a part of this? And the results oftentimes are showcased in not just donations, but also overall support. So you might see, a rise in volunteering during this, and overall contribution, but also just support. During this time, people really want to feel a part of solution. I mean, they're hearing about
Right.
a lot of things going on and they want to be a part of that solution. And what's so amazing about our industry is that is what, we do. That is what nonprofits are here to serve as in a lot of ways. And so taking advantage, I hate to use that word, but it's true. When these causes kind of surface and come to light, you can be a part of that. And people want to be a part of the solution that you are providing. And so giving them that opportunity is really important during this time. We call it a rapid response strategy, and it can be applied to election giving, but it can go beyond too.
Well, and I think there's a couple of ways to do that. And I'd be interested in you kind of thinking through an example or two, because, one is to very specifically hit on, this became a very big topic during a presidential debate that we weren't expecting to come out. But if you're going to be ready with rapid response, you need to know, who's going to be able to launch the communications campaign the next day or even the same day, if you're, really thinking that whatever you're doing is particularly sensitive. But maybe simplifying the approval layers and bringing that down, having some pre-conversation about what's okay and what's not, can make that ability to be one of the first ones out of the gate to take advantage of that moment in time more important. Even if we don't know what that specific topic is right now, if you can build that strategy internally to say, we want to go, be ready to go to this type of donor with this type of selection criteria, with this kind of messaging, because we expect that's going to be coming at some point, but we want to hold the actual final approval on that until that thing happens. So people can be having those conversations now, right? Kind of forecasting a little bit about, our mission is around, feeding people in a community, and, federal spending on hunger relief has been a big thing. We can expect a budget conversation when that comes. We want this message to be ready. We're going to do it now. Is there, kind of enough pre-thinking that people can do that when the response does get triggered, it really is rapid? I mean, it really is fast.
Yeah. The strategy behind it should be now, right? If you haven't gone through the process of outlining it, and I mean like in a document, having all of the steps, having how you would want to respond is really important. So a few things here could be, even something as simple as social media posts. But if we start at the top of understanding, okay, this is how we want to show up in this topic. This is, we can use, the example that you just provided. We want people to know and understand that this is what we stand for when it comes to ensuring that, school children have lunches, those sorts of things. That's something that has come up most recently in a conversation I was just having. And so, okay, what is our talk track there? What is everyone in the organization, as well as our board members? What is the talk track? What's the two or three sentences that we want to make sure that they are connecting the dots with as far as what's happening in, you know, political conversation, as well as how we're executing and how we're solutioning for it. So that elevator pitch or 2 to 3 sentences is really important, you know, within the organization, as well as at the board level. A second piece and a second layer to this is, do you want to have a campaign? Do you want to have a call to action set up regarding the specific topic? So oftentimes we see organizations want and are involved in the topic. They're not asking, they're not bringing that call to action into play. And so, you know, you are a part of the solution. Donations have to be a part of your solution. Ask. And this is this can be a really important time. So it could be, you know, how are we directing funds? Are we sending it through our main donation page? Are we, you know, having a very specific campaign just around this that we're directing people to? Those sorts of decisions can sometimes take time. When we are thinking about a specific campaign, you know, what assets are going to be on that campaign? How are we going to talk about it? What's the story that we're trying to tell? Is there a few pictures that we want to make sure we have on hand that can speak to it? People can visually see what the solution is that we're providing, and they can be a part of that. So that's, you know, when, if it is a new campaign that you want to route something through, that's something that I would have on hand. And then on the social media side, making sure that you have prompts in play that are, you know, applicable to what's being talked about, that also have a call to action with it. So it could be, we're looking for more volunteers. It could be we're looking for more donations for this specific program, but you always want to make sure you have a call to action and any sort of, you know, response strategy, because people do want to get involved. I keep saying this. And I still see, you know, even some of our clients sending things out about, we are part of the solution, but no call to action. Right. And this is a great time to get people a little bit closer and involved, because they want to be a part of it.
So some things are a little predictable. There'll be some conversations about budget. There'll be some conversations about environment. I mean, there are some things that we know, but there are going to be other pieces where, you know, something will break in a campaign that we just can't predict. And here, that rapid piece, I think, is a little bit more about streamlining your review and approval process. And this can be hard for some nonprofit organizations to release a little bit of control, but recognizing that those people that do come out of the gate more quickly with information, with calls to action, with stuff, are probably going to be in a better stead to take advantage of those moments than folks that need to go through 3 or 4 more layers of approval before they can go out to the public with a new answer. So I do think that there's a moment here in this rapid response idea that we're talking about to think internally around, you know, is it more important to be a little quicker and maybe just slightly rougher around the edges, or is it going to be more important to be absolutely crystal clear on something, even if it takes longer to do? And I'd be interested in your thoughts on what you see as happening in different clients that you've seen work this way.
Oh, it's a great hot topic, because I think you're going to get a few different, depending on the day, I'd probably have a different response, honestly, just because, you know, I've seen it go real well and I've seen it not go real well. And so, you know, what I think is so special about the nonprofit side of things is the authenticity that often shows up, and the transparency that often shows up. You can sometimes feel when things are too tailored, and, you know, it gets away from, I think, that authenticity aspect of what can be brought to the table. But I have also seen it go real bad, in the sense that, you know, hey, we want to be the first one talking about this because that's important to us and we have a stance. And I'm thinking of an executive director I was working with, and, you know, a few days later, she was like, you know, if I would have taken an hour, I probably wouldn't have written that post. I probably wouldn't have spoke about it in that way. So it is a little bit, I always go back to, you know, if it's emotionally charged, take an hour. Write it out and then take an hour. And that, I mean, I use that in all aspects of my life, but especially in something like this where, we're talking about really sensitive topics that impact people in very different ways, and your words can hold a ton of value, and they're a direct reflection of your organization. So if you are taking a response, or if you are taking action and with a response, I always say if it's emotionally charged, write it out and then wait an hour and come back and revisit it, because I have seen especially leadership at the nonprofit level maybe backtrack in certain ways. But I do think it's important to show up in an authentic way. And so this rapid response, I think, can give you a template. And that's probably the most important thing that these strategies provide, is the initial template, where then you can add a little bit more in the moment rather than trying to, create something off the cuff. You have a template to go off of. And it might be two or three sentences, because social media might be your strategy. It might be a campaign. It might be a message to your donor base. But if the template exists and you have a place to start from, oftentimes it won't feel so overwhelming in, the message that you're trying to get out. But I've seen it honestly work in both ways. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another, but I always will go back if it's emotion, if there's emotion in it, write it out, take an hour, come back and visit it. But the rapid response strategy should give you a template to go off of initially, and then add to it, because in the moment you're going to have more information. That's how I how I view
Well,
it. I wish
I
I had the
appreciate that.
silver bullet.
Right. There's maybe not one answer for every organization or every moment, but I do think that thinking ahead of time about, who is that second set of eyes or maybe a third that can view something so that you get that other perspective of, boy, that maybe is too emotionally loaded, and we do need to, turn that, whatever the thing may be. But an hour to run through a couple of different people and think it through and whatnot is very different from 3 days or 5 days when, it's if you're waiting to get back in front of, a board meeting to get approval for something, those things, the longevity of that moment is probably not going to be, forever. So having some thought in mind of who does need to okay this? How do we have a couple of people put eyes on it so that any one of us doesn't necessarily get too hot under the collar and react in a way that we're going to regret later or something? And certainly an hour or two is, plenty of time to have that moment to write it out, look at it, put it away, come back again. I guess I am thinking personally that putting a timeline and some approvals together ahead of that moment so that you just are not paralyzed with, boy, I don't know, should we? Oh boy, I'm not sure. Maybe we shouldn't. And then somebody else steps in and takes that limelight and provides the solution and gives that volunteer opportunity and has the donation platform, and they get that attention, and then that particular opportunity may be lost. So I hear where you're coming from, that you don't want to misstep, but I also appreciate the idea that a couple few hours isn't a big deal at all, but having some ability to respond more quickly in this time than you might normally be forced to do is an important election year kind of strategy.
Yeah, I
So,
love the call out on bringing the others along who you want in your approval process, so they are aware as well. I sit on a few boards, and one of the boards that I sit on for this organization is a very small organization. And so board involvement is really necessary for some of these sorts of gut checks almost, right? And so I love the call out of, in addition to having this template, there's also a little bit of a who else is going to put eyes on this that we know and understand is going to have the best interest of the nonprofit. And leaning in, into the board or leaning into some of the staff, I think is really important in that. So I really love the call out of ensuring that they are aware they're part of the process when the process needs to take place.
Right. And if they're going to be out of town on vacation for whatever, then, you know, who's the next person in that queue that we go to so that we don't get tripped up in and planning that now gives you the opportunity to feel like we can respond quickly, but still, you know, with attention to the future and our mission. I guess one more thing I will add to that, and I do want to get into some of your other points that we talked about earlier because they're just great ones. This year in particular, I think we also have to take that moment to do a little fact checking that, you know, what we're responding to actually happened. You know, seeing a picture of a candidate say a thing isn't necessarily that the candidate said the thing. You know, that's who shared that video. Where did that come from? Is that real? We've all got to make sure that we aren't backtracking against something that didn't actually happen, and there was some disinformation, deep fake, something or another that we got really riled up about and really wanted to respond to, and then we find out that you know, it's a bad actor out there somewhere trying to stir a pot, and it wasn't really the thing. So we got to make sure that we've got, you know, those good authenticated sources before we respond to something that maybe isn't correct, and this year more than ever.
Not focusing so much, having a balance, I think is one thing that really rings true for me as you were saying that. Not having to be a part of every conversation just because there's some association to your cause, and having a real thought out balance as to when to chime in and when not to, but also taking the time to make sure you're not responding to a deep fake, and those sorts of things. But the balance, I think, as we go into this is important as well, because if you speak too much on something, you start to lose people. You don't speak enough, they're not hearing from you. And so really striking that balance, I think, is really important during this time too.
So let me ask you, as I'm sensitive to time here, to talk a little bit about this concept you mentioned before we went to record here about rage giving. And I think this is such an important point to bring up in a year like this, to be ready to respond. How do you define that for people? What do you mean when you say rage giving could be a thing?
Yes. So rage giving, often, I mean, rage giving is a response, right? And I think we can probably call it a few different things. But elections can often spur rage giving, and it really has to do with response to either opposite beliefs and how things turn out. But it's just a response that somebody is having. So say an election doesn't go the way that they want to, they want to be a part of the solution, and they want to be a part of the solution in a big way. We often see that come up as what we've heard. It's not a term we've coined, but we hear about it in kind of this rage giving type of activity. So it's oftentimes, opposite belief of the winning candidate will give to organizations that support their perspective or opinion. This can apply in to your organization, but it's important to kind of be ready with messaging that reaches this donor base. So you can somewhat capitalize on the interest. I've used this word twice, and I don't really love to use it, but it's a moment that you can utilize. And so rage giving, or there's definitely different ways of describing it, but rage giving is real. We've seen it in the past elections. It's a way for people to express themselves, and having that ability to do that through a nonprofit cause is amazing. So after a significant, spike in, I think it was 2022, and like the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, we saw rage giving happen, and that I think was a really important moment for a lot of people who study on the philanthropic side, on digital fundraising, what was happening there. And so there's been a lot of deep dives into what it actually meant for the donor or the supporter, and what was the response of organizations on the other side of that. And you saw it in both ways, right? No matter where you sat on that specific topic, it was an area that people felt like they could stand on. Oftentimes, rage giving is more in your smaller donation amounts. They often can be first-time donors to the organization. They're donating to take a stance and make a statement, because they want to feel unity and an alignment, that they're not necessarily feeling, because sometimes elections can take a turn that you don't agree with. So rage giving is a part of this. It's something that we see on our platform. It's something that we see across the industry, and making sure you have the ability to support those new donors, because often, again, they are new donors, and then have a good response to those donors, right? That donor stewardship after something like this happens, is really important, because those often donors can turn into recurring donors, right? And become very much a part of your support system. So rage giving is a real thing. We see it in a ton of different types of social matters, social issues, and especially during an election year.
Yeah, and you can't always control how those folks are going to find you in particular to be the conduit through which they express whatever they're feeling at that moment. And it may seem like just out of the blue, all these people are suddenly giving to us. How did that happen? So I think one of the things to be sensitive to as you think about that happening is, how many different points of entry do people have to consider supporting your mission? That if there's just that one donor form on the page, and people find that, and that's how they give. They may be giving because, somebody at their college reunion said what a great organization you are, or they may be giving because they just watched this, news report that really, generated a response, and they felt the need to do something. They found you. But if each of those cases, our response back to that donor is sort of exactly the same, I do think we're missing a moment there of saying, wait a minute, we're seeing a big spike here. It's probably not just, somebody's friend at a college reunion here. This is something else that's generating that. And our automated thank you systems maybe need to be ready to adapt to that instead of just sending the same message like, wow, thanks so much for your donation. We hope that you'll continue to, give again and all these wonderful things. If you come to them with the wrong tone back out of that, you may miss that opportunity versus sort of recognizing we're seeing a huge swell of support from a community that wants things to be different. Thanks so much for giving right now. That might be a different kind of response to help those people think about, oh, they do get me. They are hearing me. They do want me to be able to do that. So having a platform that's ready to kind of talk about how those donations came in and maybe even have different points of entry that are being advertised in different ways so that we can gate people a little bit better and understand maybe they are coming in without having had a lot of thoughtful development on this process. It's something they're responding to in a moment that they really feel strongly about. And we can respond to those folks with a different stewardship initial messaging system than necessarily folks that have come in from other reasons or other ways. So that's a little more sophisticated, but I think it's absolutely doable if you think about it far enough ahead. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Your story becomes so critical in those moments, because they're just, it's a bite-sized understanding of your organization, and we want them to understand your organization as a whole, right? Especially the impact side of things. So, during this time, if you do feel like you are experiencing this sort of rage giving, there's probably a better word versus rage, but
Well,
it's
let's
good
say
enough.
surge giving at the moment, because it
Yeah,
probably happens around a moment, right? It's a surge of giving that's people didn't sit and think about it for a week. They acted pretty quickly based on something.
yes, impulse giving almost.
Yeah.
We're on the same page, you and I. We should create a Wikipedia page just on this, and go into detail on it, and also have some other descriptions for it. But this, they're getting it's a bite-sized understanding of what you do, and they want to be a part of it. And so communicating the story, communicating your impact, it's a critical time. So if you're seeing this spike, yes, you want the automated thank you receipt to go out, if they're giving digitally, but following quickly back up with, this is what we do, this is our story, this is the impact that your donation is making that association very clear in that moment is going to help them feel, you know, a part of it and potentially why they want to continue to support you and continue to give more. So that I think is just a really important idea of don't just let the automated thank you be your storytelling moment. You know, it's interesting, about one third, we did this study in the Classy State of Modern Philanthropy, and about one third of first one-time donors became recurring donors within the first 90 days. So you're looking at about 30% of donors who are one time come back and want to become more a part of your organization. And a lot of that has to do with how you're talking to them in the first 90 days, how you're speaking to them, what you're communicating. So that individual nugget of information just there, that is, hey, you might get a $5 to $10 donor. Right now is the time to communicate with them, you know, showcase the impact, because they are primed for that. Those are the donors that are primed to come back and be more a part of your organization when it comes to recurring donations.
Right. And I think recognizing that change in a welcome series, for example, you may have a normal there, here's your automated thank you, and then you've got a few messages that are scheduled to go out to those new donors to help them learn about what's going on. But that usual tactic is sort of assuming that people are coming to you, you know, more out of this place of, oh, I wanted to make an impact in my community and I learned about this thing. And that's great. And sometimes that's how donors come in. But I do think that if you see, you know, 10 times the normal number of donors popping through, I think that that welcome message series needs to be shifted a little bit, you know, to get back in touch with them to say, we do recognize this is a moment that a lot of people want to take action around, that we're hearing from a lot of people and you're part of it. You're joining a thing. And that's a different strategy that is that kind of recognizing the surge. We won't use the word rage. We'll just say the surge. You're recognizing that surge and connecting with those people to say, I get you. I get why you're here. And we want to be, you know, responsive to who you are. So we also have to be responsive to our own time limits, which are rapidly running out here. So we did have one more point about just your overall messaging strategy, that thinking that through with some urgency is really important. We just have a few minutes. So if you have thoughts that you want to kind of bring us to a close on that, and then we can certainly refer people to Classy to learn more about other things that we just don't have time to talk about today.
Yeah, I'll wrap it up into, you know, primary takeaways for our discussion today and kind of bring the communication piece into it. So, you know, it's important to look at your data. It's important to understand if that data can actually tell you something. Within that data set, you might find that, hey, I want to make sure I'm getting in touch with my, you know, high net worth donors, because oftentimes those are the donors that might be giving elsewhere. When you're talking to them and speaking to them, it's, you know, this is really where the communication can come in. And it doesn't just have to be for the high net worth donors, but you want to make sure that you're being very clear in your messaging. We go back to talking about a CTA, but communicating that you are very appreciative of this supporter of the donor, but also giving them next steps in the form of a CTA is really important. Another thing that you can do during this time is offer incentives to reduce friction it's not, friction might not be the best word here, but it really allows them to kind of feel, okay, I'm hearing all these other things around me. What's going to help me draw to this organization even more than I already do? And then a third piece of this is an omni-channel approach. So you are reinforcing your message in a few different ways. And it could be in a few different channels. So it might be on social media, it might be in their email inbox. It could also be the calls that you're having with them. So making sure that you're developing somewhat of an echo chamber with your communication method, I think, is really important. And again, this can be applied to the high net worth donors that you're just checking in on, right? I've talked to an organization a few days ago, and they were saying, hey, that piece of advice on checking on high net worth donors, I actually found that two of them are only going to give us half of what they were going to give us because they're doing, they're going to be giving in the election. And so now it was, okay, well, I don't have a choice. I need to go out and maybe rethink, you know, a different donor, or I need to ask somebody else for a higher amount because, you know, I got to make that up some way, somehow. So the high net worth donors can be really important. And we often see those are the ones that, you know, will give in different ways. So just an important call out there. And the same messaging techniques can happen with them. Although it is slightly different when you're talking one to many versus one on one. Another really important piece in the communication aspect is just saying thank you and showing saying thank you a lot. Your supporters are getting inundated with a lot of different things that can be emotionally charged, and sometimes it's just nice to receive a small thank you regarding their loyalty, regarding, you know, why they mean so much to your organization, no matter their donor level. This is a time that people, I think, really can receive a thank you, and it means a ton. And so, and then the last thing I would say, just to kind of summarize things, is don't be afraid. You know, election year does feel like there will be a lot of noise. There will be a lot of competing priorities, but you are still critical in this conversation. And your cause is still critical in this conversation. And people want to be a part of a solution that is bigger than them, and you can be that. And so whether we call it rage giving or, you know, just what happens after the election year, you know, looking at Giving Tuesday after, you know, the election actually happens, you can be a solution that they want to be a part of. So don't stop the conversation. Don't stop talking, because, you know, you're a part of this and shouldn't be fearful to be in the conversation talking about your cause.
Outstanding advice. Get out there, be part of it. I think it's so important to think through what you can do early so that you're ready to act when you can. I wish that we had a little bit more time to go into some of these because there's so much happening, but I'm just so grateful that you've taken the time to share what you've already shared. And again, we will link to the Classy website for people to be able to learn a little bit more about the tools and ideas that you're sharing there. Shana Berkey is the Vice President of Customer Experience for Classy. Shana, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, Steve, this was awesome. Thanks so much.